Today's podcast is brought to you by Balance 7. Save $10 plus free shipping this week only with code HOWIE10 at balance7.com. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up, named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. Thank you so much for joining me today. You know what time it is. It is 2A Tuesday. This is the time of day on Tuesdays where we talk to Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks in Hyannis about everything from ammo to guns to licenses to how to deal with law enforcement in the proper way if you are carrying. Toby can answer all of your questions, 844-500-4242. We already do have some people on the line, but I also want to remind everyone that you can always text in 63566. Text your question, start it with the word Curly, or you can text it into Howie's line. I read both of them back and forth, so I'll be reading all the texts throughout the course of the day. Toby Leary, thank you so much for joining the show today.
My pleasure, Grace, as always. Thanks for having me.
Now, Toby, I want to start, before we jump to the callers here in a moment, I want to start with a piece that Howie actually cut out and left on my desk. I believe it's from the Wall Street Journal, and it's something we've talked about before, but the statistics are pretty mind-blowing. Millions of women start buying guns, and this is from San Diego. Close to half of all new U.S. gun buyers since the beginning of 2019 have been women, a shift for a market long dominated by men. Now, when I jump down here, Toby, I find another interesting fact. In addition to its findings on gender, the survey found that the new gun buyers were more racially diverse. Among new gun buyers, 55% were white, 21% were black, and 19% were Hispanic. Among new women gun owners, 28% were black. The 19.6 million existing gun owners who bought more firearms since 2019 were 71% male and 74% white. Toby, are you seeing a more diverse crowd that's coming into Cape Gunworks? Are you seeing these women come in? And what are most of their reasoning for deciding that they want to learn how to use a gun and maybe get their license?
Yeah, it's very consistent with what we've seen in the last few years. There's been a trend of female gun buyers in the last couple years, which has been great. And I remember when we first opened our gun store 7-8 years ago, it was probably 30%, 25 to 30% were, I would say, female, but it's a solid 50, getting close to 50% at our shop these days. And as I've mentioned on the show a couple times, we have, groups of friends coming in, women that just make it their kind of social day, that they all come to the range and they shoot their guns and they have fun and then they go out for lunch afterwards as part of as if they were going to play racquetball or, you know, tennis or something else. So it's been great to see. And, they very enthusiastically get involved in the shooting sports. They're not real, gun collectors per se. They're more interested in buying a gun than getting the accessories that go with that gun, than taking a class on how to learn how to use that gun, and then, socially shooting the gun with friends. But they take it very seriously. So it's been a very welcome, refreshing move in the gun market and in the industry in general. So I think it's been a wonderfully successful paradigm shift. It's been great.
Yeah, and in this story, Toby, they reference this woman, Elaine Pierce, who runs a foundation, Not Me SD, that is trying to combat sexual assault and domestic violence through more women carrying firearms. And what she says she sees from women who come in and why they want to own guns, she said she decided to sign up for Not Me SD. I'm sorry, she's not the founder. She signed up for this after she watched protests against police brutality devolve into looting and burning cars in a neighboring San Diego suburb last summer. Calls to defund the police compounded her worries. "I've seen riots before, but the police were always there," the 74-year-old landscape company owner said. "With a gun, you drive into a riot, which we've seen on TV. At least you have a fighting chance." Now, that's a very interesting thing to me because a lot of these riots and a lot of these protests were about defunding the police. But almost like what Barack Obama did with gun sales, the summer of love seemed to really motivate people to get their gun license.
Oh, no doubt about it. It was the perfect storm. People ask, why are there so many people out buying guns right now? And it all started when, before even COVID lockdowns really had started, what were they doing? They were letting, you know, prisoners out of jail early because they thought they were going to get COVID in jail and be stuck in solitary confinement or what. You know, I think it was a perfectly acceptable place for them to ride out the pandemic. But on the other hand, they were just letting them out onto the street and nowhere to go, no job. And, you know, with a recidivism rate as high as it is, you just assume that they're going to have to survive and there's no jobs to be had because everything's closed. And then all of a sudden it devolved into rooting and looting and rioting and, you know, defund the police. And people with any type of common sense can say, whoa, I don't think if I dial 911 right now, the police are going to be showing up at my door, you know, to defend me. Or maybe in some cases they will still if you live in a area like we do on the Cape or whatever. But in some of these cities where they just weren't responding to certain calls to, you know, for violence or whatever, and there was demonstrations, it was crazy. So people realized they had to take responsibility for their own personal safety, that oftentimes when minutes count, you know, seconds count, the police are minutes away, unfortunately. And the police do a great job, but when you hamstring them to be able to do their job, you got to take responsibility for yourself.
No, you're absolutely right. And I want to talk a little bit about defunding the police because one of my favorites as far as hypocrites go, Representative Cori Bush is back in the news. And I am going to ask you a little bit for your take on that, Toby. But first, I always do this when Toby comes on. I talk about how we're going to take a lot of calls and then I monopolize the time because I have so many questions. But I'm not going to be selfish today. I'm going to throw it out there. Let's go to Tony. You're next with Toby and Grace. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, good afternoon, Grace. Good afternoon. What's your name?
Toby.
Toby, that's right. Like, I had it, now I don't. Okay. I have a question about a pre-ban Ruger Mini 30. I own that, and it currently has a range set up like a range rifle. At one point, I had a pistol grip and a folding stock, been misplaced. I don't know where it is. Am I allowed to put a new pistol grip, folding stock on that pre-ban gun?
If the gun is pre-ban and it was manufactured prior to September 13th, 1994, then yes. And if you had the factory folding stock with the wood stock and the wiry type stock on it, that was a really cool, you know, they actually it folded up kind of like alongside the side of the gun. It's one of my favorite stocks for that gun. And if you can find one, I would scoop it up. And if you have the original, it's definitely worth money because it's a pretty cool setup. I think Samson Manufacturing, which is a Massachusetts-based company, bought the rights to that factory folding stock, and they now offer a reproduction of it, which is a pretty cool stock. So I would put that back on if you could. It'd make it super cool. And that's what I think one of the guys on the A-team had. So you want to be like the A-team, right?
Yes, you always want to be like the A-team. Thanks for the call, Tony. We have more people on the line, 844-500-4242, but I don't think we'll have time before the break. So, Toby, I'm just going to ask you a quick question here from the text line. 781 says, my experience with handguns is with steel-framed guns. I was considering a Sig Sauer 365, but I was having trouble getting past the polymer frame. Is it durable?
Yes, it's extremely durable. So Glock was kind of the trailblazer in that and started to introduce polymer frame guns in the 1980s, late 80s. And they really took on in the 90s and became a thing pretty much for 65% of all police departments are carrying Glocks now. And those that aren't carrying Glocks are still mostly using polymer frame pistols. Our military has gone to a polymer frame pistol. And most people who purchase a defensive firearm are using a polymer-framed pistol. So there are some people out there that just have to have wood and steel, and I get that. It's more of a novelty thing or a nostalgic thing, but polymer frame guns are here to stay. They're extremely durable and reliable, and you don't have to worry about that. The 365 is an excellent choice, and you'll be very happy with the performance of that gun. So it's a good choice.
844-500-4242. We're going to break here so we can take all of the calls for Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks in Hyannis. Don't go anywhere. It's 2A Tuesday, and this is The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. It is 2A Tuesdays with Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks. If you want to call in, it's 844-500-4242. Let's go to another caller here. Kevin, you're next with Toby. What's your question, Kevin?
Good afternoon, Toby. Thanks for taking the call. Listen, I'm moving to Florida, and I've got a 38 pistol, shotgun, and a rifle. I'm considering having the weapons in one case, the ammo in another, and I'm wondering, is that going to be legally sufficient? I know there's no reciprocity laws from the East, all the way down the East Coast. I'm just trying to protect myself, should I say, have a breakdown in New Jersey. Will they understand if I'm legally licensed in Massachusetts? Do you think I'll be okay just to transport that?
Yes, you're legally able to transport through all 50 states. There is a safe transport law on the books, so you're good to go. I highly recommend that you don't stop for gas in New Jersey or New York. You just run the gauntlet straight through. You know, fuel up before you leave and then fuel up on the other side. But you are protected. Make sure the guns are encased, unloaded, and locked. So the cases are locked and, you know, they're... guns are unloaded. So, but if you do that, you're totally legal to transport through any state in the union. So you'll be good to go.
Thank you for the call, Kevin. 844-500-4242. We're talking to Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks. Toby, 774 says, if I bring my rifle to the range, do I need to transport it in a case that has a lock?
If the weapon is a high capacity or, you know, semi-automatic rifle, then yes. A rifle and shotgun that is low capacity, it does not. Technically, it's a good idea, in my opinion, to lock it up in either case, but a high capacity assault weapon does need to be, you know, and I'm using that term as the co-opted term that our government uses, but I understand it is not an assault weapon, so I know I could break the internet just by saying that, but I'm using the Massachusetts co-opted term for assault weapon under their definition that it does need to be cased and locked in order to be transported to the range or to wherever you're going with it. So, yes. The answer is yes. Lock it up.
Toby, I have a question for you because sometimes with what I... every day I'm going through the news, seeing stories, and it does feel right now like I don't see that many stories on gun control. It doesn't seem like a lot of Democrats are pushing that right now because they have other things on their agenda. But I'm sure as someone who follows this news closely and you have so much invested in the gun industry and making sure that people are able to get guns, I'm sure there's more going on than most people realize. What has this administration been up to as far as gun control? I know they have the CDC working on all sorts of, you know, this is a emergency. We have a gun violence emergency. Who knows what that's going to lead to? But what are you seeing as someone who follows a lot of this news?
Yeah, like you just alluded to, a lot of the agencies that are federal agencies, like the Department of the Treasury, Department of Commerce, the State Department, the ATF, these are all being weaponized to have a backdoor gun ban, the effect of a backdoor gun ban. And our state has done it very well. And I got to say that, you know, have very rarely even been challenged. But when you have these agencies that don't have any right to write law or interpret law, in some cases they don't even have the power to enforce law, depending on which agency they are, now creating new policies and new regulations that significantly affect our ability to exercise our rights, then they have just weaponized a whole regulatory body of the federal government to now restrict our freedom. It wouldn't be tolerated in any other aspect of life. If I said, Grace, you need to come on Tuesday night and take a class, pay $100 and whatever to take this class, it's going to be 4 hours, we're going to tell you what the law is around your ability to go to church this Sunday, and you're going to have to get fingerprinted and photographed and get an ID card made so that you can present it at the door of the church and they'll let you in, and then you'll be able to go attend church. There would have been a revolution years ago if that happened, right?
But yeah, but you know what, Toby? What you're saying sounds like a lot like the key to New York City, the vaccination passport program.
Yeah, yeah, because if they can do it with something as, you know, enumerated right from our Bill of Rights, the very second right, which is the right to keep and bear arms, and they can restrict it to the point where now you need to justify why you're even trying to exercise your Second Amendment right, now the floodgates have opened. Now they can do it for anything. If they can tell you, you know, they can restrict you about what type of weapon you can have, about where you can have it, about how old you're going to be when you have it, like you can go serve in the military, but you can't buy this type of gun, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, then you're basically, the door's wide open for whatever other tyranny they want to come up with,
right,
including passports and, you know, whatever else. But then again, you don't need anything to go vote, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks. Let's go to another call here. Jay, you're next with Toby. What's your question, Jay?
Hey, Grace. Thanks for taking my call, Toby. It's a pleasure to talk to you as always. Long-time listener, second-time caller. So, Toby, question for you. I just got my FID. I actually talked to you a couple weeks ago. You gave me some good advice. I just got the FID. I got myself a nice shotgun, and I got a High Point 9mm long rifle, right? And when I picked up my guns, the shop owner said, you know, he wasn't supposed to sell me the ammunition, right? He's like, so I don't know how you got it. It's a 10-round magazine. I'm just wondering, I mean, I got approved in Massachusetts. I live in Massachusetts, so I'm just kind of wondering if there's a place that will really just give me a clear understanding of what I can and what I can't have, type of deal. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
All right, Jay, thanks for the question. Toby, you've got about a minute to answer this.
All right, I'll be quick. Yeah, there's a lot of shops, and I know Walmart did it for a long time, that wouldn't sell ammunition that could be used in a handgun to anyone who owned an FID card or had an FID card, because they didn't want them buying ammunition for a handgun. So the problem with that is a lot of people have pistol caliber carbines, and so there's no law that says you can't buy 9mm ammunition with an FID card. Like, your FID card isn't restricted to a certain type of ammunition. You can buy 9mm ammunition legally, and there's no reason, you know, they should prohibit you from that. But I understand why they're doing it, because they don't want to sell someone ammo for a handgun if they only have an FID card. But the tools have changed. So, yeah,
right,
you can come down. We'll get you some.
Great. Thank you, Toby. And thank you, Jay, for the call. 844-500-4242. We'll be able to take a lot more calls in this last segment coming up, and we'll read off a lot of these texts. Call in now, 844-500-4242. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. We have Toby Leary on the line from Cape Gunworks. This is Two-Way Tuesdays, and I'm thrilled to see how many people are calling in right now. Let's go right to the callers. Debbie, you're next with Toby Leary and Grace Curley. Go ahead, Debbie.
Oh, hi. Yeah, if I have a lockbox, you know, a box lock, can the gun be loaded inside it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I get that a lot in our classes, but you can stage a gun in the house for home defense. So you can have the gun loaded in a locked container or box, something that prohibits unauthorized access from, you know, those who aren't either old enough or licensed to touch the gun in the first place from accessing it. So, yes, you can. I would just recommend getting a safe that is purpose-built for that design, so you get a quick access safe that's either biometric or radio RFID device, and make sure that the trigger is completely enclosed in either a holster or some sort of trigger guard while it's in the safe, so you don't inadvertently hit the trigger as you draw the gun from your staged position. But yeah, that's a very good way to store a gun at home safely and effectively. So
thank you for the call, Debbie. Toby, what about when you have a safe, if it's a smaller safe, are there rules about, you know, having it nailed to the ground or secured to something? Because some of these safes are the kind of size where if someone wanted to, they could pick up the whole safe.
Yeah. There's no rule about that. In other words, it's not necessarily for theft. I mean, if someone's in your house stealing things, they probably have bolt cutters or the means to get it out of the house anyway. It's more to prevent unauthorized access to the firearm. So it's really just designed to lock it up and secure it from those who would inadvertently grab it or those who would want to grab it intentionally for doing harm to themselves or others. So you got to make sure it's secured against that. But it's not necessarily this ultra secure, like make sure the criminals don't get it. Like when I go away on vacation, all the guns go in the big heavy duty safe, but when I'm home, I stage them in the quick access biometric safe for, you know, quick access, so for defensive purposes. But yeah, when I go away, I don't want them just carrying it out of the house, so it goes in the big heavy safe that's all bolted down and secured. So
right, okay. Yep. Let's go to Frank, you're next with Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks. What's your question for Toby, Frank?
Hi, Grace.
Hi.
Listen to you all the time, honey.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Toby, I got a quick question for you. What's got the most punch, a nine or a 45?
Oh, man. This is a troll, Grace, trying to break the internet today. You trying to get me in a lot of trouble here. No, I'm just kidding.
Toby, you're going to end up on that blog again where they're just mad, man. They're waiting for something like this.
What? Did you hear what he said today? No, the bottom line is the punch is one of those things that you can analyze to death. There's even a whole school of thought out there called the Taylor knockout factor. A guy has actually come up with some sort of, you know, scale to rate it. It's like the Scoville units of the hot sauce world. You know, it's this guy has come up with it. But I don't necessarily even agree with that Taylor knockout factor, because the one thing that it doesn't take into account as much as, you know, it puts the weight of the bullet, the velocity of the bullet, and everything else, and, you know, Mr. Wizard formula. But the problem is kinetic energy is weight times velocity squared. So the velocity is the more important part of the equation. So you get a 45, which is a big, fat, heavy bullet going pretty slow. It hits hard, and it's a big piece of lead. But conversely, you end up with a lot of recoil, especially if you get like a plus P, you know, a lot more powder. 9mm is a faster bullet that's lighter, and the quickness of the bullet, the velocity of it, is the more important part of the equation. That's the velocity squared part. So you can get a light bullet, like a 5.56, which is really a 22 caliber bullet, going 3,000 feet per second, which has a tremendous amount of kinetic energy, versus a 22 long rifle, which is still 22 caliber, but it's only going 1,000 feet per second. So you can see how just saying 45 versus 9, it's a tough thing to say.
Excuse me. I would like to direct the witness to answer the question. It feels like you're trying to avoid controversy. Toby, 9 or 45? You got to pick one.
All right. So if I have to pick one, I'm going with 9mm. Does the 45 hit a little harder? Probably. But because I'm going with 9mm, because I what stops a threat is multiple shot strings of fire to the high center chest. You know, that's the highest probability of ending the threat in the quickest amount of time. I can shoot a 9mm much more efficiently than I can a 45. It also has an increased capacity in most cases. So I can carry more rounds in the gun in a 9mm than in a 45 of the same size gun. So for that reason, I'm going with the 9mm.
Oh, good luck with that, my friend. I have a feeling you're going to have a lot of 45 people pretty upset with you. But hey, that's your cross to bear. All right, Toby, we got a lot more people on the line. We have full line, so I want to answer these pretty quick here so we can get to everyone. Let's go to Antonio. You're next with Toby Leary and Grace Curley. What's your question for Toby, Antonio?
Hello. So I live in a red town. My police department's taken up to 1 year to process FID. I just put mine in a couple days ago. I was told 2 or 3 days. A friend of mine texted me. He said it took up to a year. They said they would take up to a year for his application. It's an FID for context. What is the legal limit on how long they can take on these things? Is there a legal limit? This is just to get prints and a photo done. This isn't even the state police part.
Right. Yeah. So here's the thing. Once you get your prints and your photo done, they can, you know, probably deny that as long as they want. But ultimately, some towns are telling you need to sit down with the police chief and tell them why you need a license to carry or an FID card. So they're setting an appointment, so you can't even turn in your application till after you've explained to them and looked them in the eye why you want a gun. But once you've submitted your application, they are supposed to respond within 40 days. If they haven't responded within 40 days, they have effectively issued you a denial, and you can start to get your paperwork together, get your stuff in order, so that within the next, whatever it is, 50 days, because you have 90 days to file an appeal, you might want to get the ball rolling. So I would reach out to Keith Langer or Jason Guida or someone like that to help you with this process, but file an appeal on denial. If you do that, they're going to say, well, wait a minute, we haven't denied you, but you really have, because you didn't answer me within the 40 days. But you want to make sure that you file that appeal before 90 days, because that's as many days as you have to file the appeal. So you'll have to reapply after that if you don't hear back within 90 days. So you want to make sure your ducks are in a row so that you can file that appeal within the 90-day period. So
thanks for the call, Antonio. Good luck with that. Let's go to Lisa. You're next with Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks. What's your question, Lisa?
Okay, so I've been listening to quite a while with...
Oh, Lisa, hold on. I think you're dialing while you're talking to us, so just back away from the phone a little bit and start over.
Oh, sorry about that.
No problem.
Step away from the phone.
I've been listening to him talking about the different ways they're going through the back door of controlling guns. My question is, what's to keep them from controlling ammunition?
That's a good question, because actually, Lisa, I think it was last week, Toby, or maybe 2 weeks ago, we were talking about that they were putting, I don't know how you'd describe it, but they were pretending that it was a way to kind of get back at Russia, but it was actually affecting gun owners and people like yourself who are selling ammo.
Yeah, it's very good question, and they did ban the importation of future shipments of Russian ammo, and also they are proposing right now, I believe it's in Connecticut, but it's also in, I believe, the U.S. House of Representatives as well. I don't know. I'd have to look it up, but they're proposing a 5-cent tax on each bullet, each round. So this is a way that, you know, they can have this backdoor regulation on our Second Amendment. So they're proposing a 5-cent tax on every round of ammunition. You can only imagine the staggering amount of money that is when people who buy thousands of rounds of ammunition every year. And so this would be also part of that legislation that's being proposed is going to be tied to micro-stamping technology, which would cost the gun industry multiple millions of dollars, and it doesn't even exist right now. So they want every round to have some sort of identifying micro stamp on the bullet itself and the case itself, so that they can pick up a case and identify where it was sold and, you know, who bought it and everything else and who manufactured it and all that, not to mention the 5-cent tax on it. So this would ultimately cripple the gun industry if this type of legislation is passed. But you get people who are uneducated about it would say, oh, that just makes common sense. You know, this is some of that common sense gun legislation that, you know, Elizabeth Warren's talking about. Why would you oppose something like that? You know, and it doesn't make any sense. We don't do it on any other product or, you know, especially when it comes to our enumerated rights. So.
Absolutely. All right. Toby, I don't want to cut you off there, but we have a lot more people on the line, so let's try to keep these answers really quick so we can get to as many people as possible here. Alex, you're next with Toby Leary. Go ahead, Alex.
Hi, Toby. I've seen advertisements for self-defense air pistols that shoot pepper balls, and I was wondering, is that something that you would need an LTC or just an FID, or do you know?
Well, in this state, you no longer need either to get one of those pepper ball guns, if you will. So you don't need any license to buy a gun that shoots pepper spray or pepper balls. So that is not regulated currently. It used to be, but it's no longer.
All right. Awesome. Let's go to, thanks for the call, Alex. Let's go to John. You're next with Toby Leary. What's your question, John?
Hi. I heard earlier a caller mention he had an FID card and a rifle, and I'm the only rifle with a 10-round magazine. I ran into a problem. I went to a dealer and asked him to order a Browning semi-automatic with a detachable 10-round box magazine, and he said it was illegal in Massachusetts to sell anyone with only an FID card a rifle with a detachable magazine because they might add a bigger magazine. So I sent the spec for the rifle to my local police department, and he said, oh, I don't see a problem with it. And now I don't know who to turn to. The rifle in question was a Browning Stalker. Yes.
Yeah, which is a hunting rifle. Correct? It was the Browning Buckmark Stalker or whatever you said. What caliber was it?
Yeah.
I don't even think they make. Yeah, I don't even think they make a magazine larger than 10 rounds for that gun. So there's no way that is a restricted item for someone with an FID card. So you could certainly buy that on an FID card, even though it is semi-automatic. It is not considered a high-capacity weapon, so you're good to go on that one. So hopefully you'll be able to find a dealer that'll do the transfer for you. And unfortunately, it's so confusing. You know, a lot of dealers are frozen and don't know what to do. They don't want to risk losing their license, but that is certainly one that you could do with an FID card.
Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks. We don't have time for everybody else, but I appreciate everyone calling in and texting in. And there's always next week to get more questions answered. And there's this Friday. Toby will be here this Friday, so you can call in and ask him all your questions. Toby, where can people listen to your show?
They can tune in at Rapid Fire. Go to our website, capegunworks.com, and click on Rapid Fire, and we'll notify them anytime we go live. Or you can hear us on WXDK, CRN and WRKO, or wherever you get your podcasts, you can download Rapid Fire, and would love to have you listen to us. It'll be great.
Thank you very much, and you guys can always talk to Toby at Cape Gunworks in Hyannis. He's always there, and he can answer your questions. Now, I have to tell you about a great publication, and it's the longest-running magazine in the world, The Spectator, where they believe that journalism must be witty and insightful, that ideas should be discussed without the constant threat of cancellation. The Spectator never confuses the serious with the dull. It isn't right-wing or left-wing. It's just awesome. The Spectator is more cocktail party, less political party. This is a great publication. And yes, I'm a little biased. I write for The Spectator, and I'm a huge fan of the other writers who I get to have my name appear next to, including Stephen Miller, Carol Markowitz. There's so many: Lionel Shriver, Christopher Caldwell, Douglas Murray, Toby Young, Julie Bindle. Everybody there is just, they all have different opinions and different political stances, but they're all great writers, and they make great points. I have a piece up right now. This is a brand new Spectator piece, and it's about the media elite echo chamber and how over the past week I started to notice that it was kind of falling apart, that people like Bill Maher and Nicki Minaj were pressing back against this idea that they have to have the right opinion. And you can't be wrong these days. If the media declares that you're wrong, you have to be silenced. So you can check that out at Spectator World. But you can also sign up today and you'll receive 3 free months of both the print and digital magazine, plus a free Spectator hat. Just use offer code GRACE at checkout to redeem the special offer for listeners of this podcast. Just go to spectator.us/special offer and use offer code GRACE. I love the Spectator because it's dedicated to wit, strong reasoning, and brilliant writing. I always laugh. I read a lot of their pieces on air, but I read a lot of them just for fun. And they're always interesting, and sometimes they're hilarious. From cancel culture to cultural cuisine, The Spectator will entertain you from cover to cover. So sign up today to get 3 free months of The Spectator for free, plus a free Spectator hat when you subscribe today at spectatorworld.com/special offer. That's spectatorworld.com/special offer. Make sure you use offer code GRACE at checkout. We'll be right back with Howie Carr. Don't go anywhere. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Grace Curley. She's the cool kid at the lunch table.
I want a hamburger. No, a cheeseburger. I want a hot dog. I want a milkshake. I want potatoes.
You'll get nothing and like it.
This is The Grace Curley Show.
Just in time for the car crossover is Mr. Carr himself, Professor Carr, the Monsignor, the trash man. He's in the studio, and he's going to help us with the poll question. Today's poll question is brought to you by the Follinsbee Inn, located on beautiful Kezar Lake in North Sutton, New Hampshire. Someone tweeted me last night a beautiful picture of their Follinsbee gift card that they got during Grace's Goodies. I know you're going to have a great time. That's Follinsbee Inn, spelled Follansbee. So go to follinsbeeinn.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Will the Democrats pass their $3.5 trillion bill?
I am going to say, based off what I've read in Politico, National Review, some Twitter sources, I'm going to say no. I don't think it's going to happen.
No, I don't think so either.
And it's the best news I've heard in so long.
Did you read the Wall Street Journal story, the editorial today? I mean, all this crap, it's like they've got all these IEDs in this bill, improvised explosive devices to destroy the U.S. economy. They were talking about this Family Leave Act. Even if you're not working, you can get 12 weeks of family leave. Did you know this? This is like the child tax care credit. Even if you're not working and not paying taxes. I mean, this is just more welfare, just billions and trillions of dollars of welfare.
Well, I did see that Katie Hill today was tweeting that they tried to jam too much stuff in there. And someone noted that once Katie Hill thinks the bill is too full of pork, maybe you've gone overboard. It really is crazy. It's all part of the human infrastructure, Howie. And AOC really thinks, these progressives really think that they're going to show these moderates who's boss by saying, well, we won't pass anything. And the moderates at this point, according to sources, are just kind of saying, fine, let both of them fail. It's better for us to let both of them fail than to go along with this thing.
If it fails altogether, I'll get to keep my seat.
Yeah, maybe I'll get to keep my job.
Yeah, that pays almost $200,000 a year. It sure as hell beats working.
Jared, what are the results?
67% of the audience believes no, the $3.5 trillion bill will not happen.
All right, everyone. So Howie Carr is coming up next. He's got a great show planned. He's got a state trooper story that you've probably already read, but you need Howie to give you all of the details. Don't go anywhere. I'll be back tomorrow. This is The Grace Curley Show.